bloodshot eyes, I walk to the water for a last goodbye. He begged so much, it clouded my mind. One thing's clear, the man's gotta die. Man makes right, so he said, when he yelled all the keys over our head. I lived in that grip, but now he'll learn. At the end, with the tables turned, Lord, forgive me. Take me on down the river where the guilt can't find a red-handed sinner. On where the grave can't cry out. 'Cause I done wrong down the river with a hand on a Colt and a finger on the trigger. And on before dawn they try to find. Take me on down. Well, I sank that body by the riverbank. Caught a boat staff, took off like a hurricane. With spotlights, dogs, hit the whole nine yards. And breathing down my neck and breathing hard. 2 weeks in a wild chase across the highways, mountains, over seven states. Found a man at the harbor, said that he could take me across the ocean somewhere far away. Lord, forgive me and take me on. Jumping off the ledge, but not before it gets due to the chest. Now there's blood and water filling up my lungs. Blood and water filling up my lungs. My heart is beating like a fading drum. Lord, forgive me, here I come. Take me on. Yeah.
George Mitrovic, author. To this date, he has written 81 books covering phenomena ranging from UFOs to lake monsters to hairy hominids and several other bizarre subjects with more to come. Read all about George Mitrovic's amazing encounters with UFOs. Read the volumes George Mitrovic has written covering many areas of the world and shifting wormholes. George Mitrovic has written volumes about amazing places all around the world and amazing Bigfoot encounters. George Mitrovic has written volumes covering the United States, and I've only named just a few. George Mitrovic, author. Read his many fine books. They're all available right now at Amazon.com. Conversations with the Dead, The Secret of All Things, is a nonfiction book in which author Marshall P. Morris writes about his investigation into the 1963 disappearance and murder of a 17-year-old woman of American Indian descent. And in the unfolding investigation, Marshall discovers that his meeting with God in 1958 was real, as were his past memories of the fall of Jerusalem. The book takes a 180 from the woman's murder when, in 2016, the murdered woman arranges a meeting between herself, the author, and one other in which the secrets of life, death, heaven, hell, spirits, angels, immortality, reincarnation, and God are revealed. It's an eye-opener into a world hidden from our view that few see, let alone experience. The book will hold you in its pages till the very last word. Distributed through Amazon Books in the Blue series. The book is available in the 6x9 Blue Book, in the Blue ebook, and in Kindle. Get it today. You are listening to Night Dreams Talk Radio Network, the home of Night Dreams Talk Radio, with Gary Anderson. Syndicated worldwide. Paranormal talk radio, like you remember.
Well, I hope everybody's had a great Friday. I tell you what, the grocery stores are like crazy. Things like last week were this amount of money. They've gone up in price. I tell you, we're ready for a real trip here in the near future. The feds next week are going to raise the interest rate. And I was reading an article in Wall Street Journal. It says it's going to cause people not to be able to buy cars, credit cards, you name it. It's going to affect everything. I don't know what Bank of America is going to do. Will letting people move into houses with no money, no job, no credit rating? I don't know. It's really crazy. In the news, I've been warning people, you know, these solar flares are really, really getting out of control. A massive solar flare knocked out radio in Africa and the Middle East today. Did you hear about that one, James?
I didn't hear about that one, but it doesn't surprise me. I'm just waiting for it to hit and cause some problems here in our country. But listen, that's a Pandora's box that we've been talking about for 4 or 5 years now.
Oh, yeah, and it is really scary when you think about it. It lose radio communication totally and all that in all of Africa and then in the... Oh, yeah. I mean, could you imagine what would happen here if it happened in our country? You go to your cash machine, you want to pull money out, it's not going to happen. You want to call up your mother-in-law and say, hey, don't come over this weekend. They're going to show up because... you couldn't make that phone call. I mean, it's really scary. Well, you know what? Could you imagine you're watching, well, All in the Family or Married with Children, my favorite show, and you're in your easy chair, drinking your Duff's beer, just relaxed, and you're watching it, and you're eating your popcorn and pretzels and everything else. Well, while you're watching your favorite show, all of a sudden you hear this big bang on your roof. And you hear timbers cracking, and then you hear your plasterboard above you just like burst open, and right there between your feet. No, God didn't send you the present, but an airliner did. They dropped a giant turd from one of the toilets in an aircraft, and it just happened to hit the guy right in front of his feet.
I got to tell you, when I seen that earlier, it reminds me of that scene from the movie Joe Dirt when the same thing happened. Only he carted it around and it started to thaw out and some peanuts started showing up and he started eating the peanuts and his buddy goes,
okay, you're getting a little bit, okay, I know where you're going there. Need to eat some for you break out with shingles.
Oh, I know, but Lord knows, need more breaking out from allergic reactions.
You're trying to say that he was eating shit?
No, he was eating the peanuts from that ball.
The peanuts from what they go around and say, would you like some free peanuts? Now it's not free. They charge you. Hey, we got a good deal on peanuts, a little bag here for like $5. Well, you know, the newest thing in your corner grocery store is stalkers, not the type of people that stalk you, but stalking the shelves. But you know what? To cut down the cost of employees, they got robots doing that.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm going to wait for the day when that AI intelligence finally figures out, you know what? We don't need a teller behind the counter anymore. You're obsolete. And then what?
Well, you know, I went into Home Depot. They had two tellers in all Home Depot. Everything is self checkout.
Right. A lot of stores are a lot of self-checkout now. It's like, geez, you want to take the product home and eat it for me or use it for me too? It's like you're eliminating all these jobs. You're so correct.
Yeah. Like McDonald's and other ones, they still are, you can order online, but they can cut down in place. In fact, most of the McDonald's they're not even open anymore to walk in. You have to either order it online or, call it in or, get in your car and wait forever. I tell you, it saves employees. I was reading an article again in Wall Street that this big tycoon who's a billionaire, multi-billionaire, they asked him, they said, are you going to bring back employees back in the office? And he goes, no, it's cheaper for them to do the work at home than it is to come into the office.
It is cheaper. You're so correct. And, you mentioned these restaurants. They frown anymore, at least around here, if you go and actually try to pay for something, order for something in person. They don't even like it. It's getting out of hand. They're eliminating a lot of jobs. And, a lot of that started with the car factories.
Oh, yeah. And one of my friends said that his wife does customer support for a banking credit card company. And she used to go into the office. Well, she does now everything at home because of COVID. And he said, I'm going to sue my wife's employer. And I go, why? Well, my wife, during this whole COVID thing, because she sits at the desk at home and does everything from home, has gained about 90 pounds.
Oh, my. What a lawsuit. I could just see that one come up there. Well, Your Honor, it goes like this. She didn't work. She gained weight. And now I'm mad at the.
Well, she was working. But the thing is, when you're working in the office, you can't be eating steady.
Right.
If you're
right.
working out of your own home, right, you could be eating. Who knows what you're doing? Having a couple shots of vermouth? I don't know.
A vermouth with some peanuts, please. But yeah, a lot. He's not the only one. Boy, that would if that went through and they let it, there would be so many more coming forward.
Yeah. Like, hey, my wife gained 90 pounds. Now she has no sex drive. I'm suing you because of no sex and. I have to buy her all new clothes because she can't fit in her clothes. It's all your fault because you're making her work at home. Well, Google accidentally deposited $249,099 into a security expert's account.
Yeah, I tell you what, that reminded me of a similar story when another company did about the same thing and the people spent the money. I wonder if they spend the money or going to it, but no, they turned it in, I think, didn't they?
But did you hear what I said? He is a security expert.
Oh, my goodness.
Of all people for it to happen to, and he happens to be, works for Google. And he's an expert on security fraud, and he gets the money put in his account. That doesn't look good for Google, does it?
That doesn't look good for anybody all the way around, but how ironic is that? Yeah, my goodness. What a snafu.
Well, a guy had a car problem, right, in Missouri. And he goes in, and, he's wasting time because his car's evidently not running. He buys a lotto ticket. And he won 100,000 clams.
Let me tell you, he can buy a whole nice car with that. What a stroke.
Not really.
No.
Not really, because we're going to be talking about a car pretty shortly. It costs way more than that. Have you looked at car prices lately? Are you still out of it?
I'm still out of it. No. Yeah,
you can't even go. You know what? Average car, the time you finance it now, is around $50,000 or up. A truck. A friend of mine bought a truck here last month. $90,000 for a pickup truck. $90,000.
Yeah, and then it'd be probably lucky if it gets 15, 17 miles a gallon on top of that. But yes, these prices are through the roof. It is ridiculous. And what you just talked about earlier with that other news story, people are not going to even be able to afford to buy these things, much less finance them or the gas and all everything else.
Well, no one's going to finance anything if the interest rates go up next week with the feds.
Right.
And by the way, the stock market took a huge dive today. A lot of people, you know, are expecting to retire here this year, next year, and they're going to find they lost a lot of money in their 401s.
Oh, yeah, they are. And listen, a lot of these people are going to be sick, have a heart attack, or just go plain crazy. And that's a perfect sign, like you say, with the grid going down, what's going to happen? These people can't get their money. That upsets people big time.
Oh, yeah. You know, again, you know, because we just bought a new car, and then we have another car that's not that old, but I still have my 2008 Scion made by Toyota, and they don't make the Scion anymore. But you know what? I've had two water pumps, three alternators, and probably three batteries, and three sets or four sets of brakes. Still has the original muffler on it. All that is pushing 300,000 miles.
Wow, you definitely got your money's worth out of that car and then some. And let me ask you something, Gary. Every time the battery went, how much did you have to pay? $26,000 or
no, the battery nowadays, you know what? You have to buy a smart battery nowadays. Otherwise, you risk wrecking your computer system.
Computer.
Yeah, so yeah. The battery is like $259 a crack. But wow. I'm telling you something. I got my money on the car. I bought the car brand new. Brand spanking new. Had every feature you could put on it. And I've been the most happy with that because I've never had a car. Goes maintenance-wise, I haven't spent maybe $2,000 on it. Period. Since the day I bought it for maintenance.
That is amazing. Matter of fact, it's like you went around the world about 20 or I don't even know.
Well, it depends on which world you're talking about. Some worlds are a little bit smaller than the others, so you can go around more times.
That's true, but I got to tell you, that is amazing. 300 some thousand miles on that car. You got your money's worth. I'm just blown away at that.
Now I feel like I'm driving a diesel rig, you know. They go 4 or 5 a million miles. You know,
yeah.
And here I got a car. And I'll tell you, I had another car, a Datsun, back in the 80s. And I bought it used for $50. And the shocks were broken in the back. And it had like 200 and some odd thousand miles on it. And I drove that car for like 3 years. And, you know, it smoked like you wouldn't believe, but I figured the answer out. I didn't use STP or any of those engine additives. What I did is I just put 90 weight oil mixed in with 50 weight oil. Never, you know what? The knocking went away. I drove that thing for a couple years and put on another like 30, 40,000 miles on it. Never spent a penny on it. But it was really nice. You come up to the stop. You know those little things you put in your back rear window with a bobbing head?
Yeah.
Well, every time I would come up to a quick stop because the shocks were shot, the back end would be like that bobbing head.
Oh, my goodness. I remember a long time ago, I bought a car similar to that. It was, matter of fact, when I bought this like 20-some years ago, my ex-wife, I said, hey, I bought you a Vette. And she was all excited. You know, she goes outside and she goes, and outside was a Chevette, you know, but it had a hole in the floor where you could see the ground road go by underneath your feet on the driver's side.
I know you. When you're out cruising around, right, no one's looking. You're done with your soft drink, right? And you just drop it down the hole while you're moving, right? Nobody saw you throw it out the window. All of a sudden, there it is on the road, right? Am I right?
You nailed it, Gary, I got to tell you. But you know what? That thing got 40 miles a gallon.
Yeah, well, of course, they probably got more than that because you were siphoning your neighbor's gas and supplementing. How would you really know how many miles a gallon you're getting? Big shout out to Nancy, to Barb, to Space Case, to Kim. How you doing, Kim? Do you know today is National Mayflower Day? Did you know that?
I did not know that. I do know I used to pick them when I was a younger kid.
Not that type.
I know.
You were picking them, and you know what? I told you, you can't smoke it. Anyway, it's National Cinnamon Raisin Bread Day. And you know what? Went to the store today. Not anybody bought me a loaf of cinnamon bread, and that's my favorite bread. You know that.
Oh, how dare them. It was national. Maybe there wasn't any in the stores to buy because it's that day.
Well, it's National Step Family Day.
So what does that mean? You step on your family?
No, that's like step family, you know, step family.
Yeah.
It's a National Play-Doh Day.
Now, that one I can get in line with because I love that Play-Doh. That is some good stuff.
Jeez. I don't know. My mother used to get mad at me because it really wrecked a lot of shit.
Yeah,
it did. You know, you put it on something and you forget to take it off, and it get it hard. Well, it's National Working Parents Day.
They've got a holiday or national day for everything. I'm telling you, that's another one.
Well, National Tradesman Day. Well, hey guys, without you, I mean, every time I try to build something. You guys don't have to come, you know, if it wasn't without them. Every time I build, like, you know, putting a door frame in, I have to call up a handyman to get it, you know, plumbed because it's sideways this way or that way or leaning that way. I'm not good at putting anything together. So, hey, big shout out to all the tradesmen. It's National Booger Eating Day. Oh. Seriously.
Where'd you get that one? Yeah, that's related to that poop drop thing or something. I don't know. I've never heard tell of that one.
I made that one up.
Yeah.
I apologize. Well, do you hear about the grizzly bear attacked two bull hunters? This is in Canada, who actually went through a major encounter because this grizzly bear literally was trying to tear him apart.
I did read that, but I didn't see the whole details of it. But here's my question. Grizzlies attacking two men. Who's filming this? And why aren't they running or at least helping them or doing something? That's crazy.
Well, look at the guy in Alaska last year, right? He shot this bear, and the bear mauled him and tore out half his face, and his eye was hanging out of the socket. And there's blood everywhere, and he's got his cell phone, and he's doing a selfie, and says, I killed the bear. I got the bear. And, you know, not realizing he doesn't have a face left anymore from the bear.
Yeah, right, not realizing he looks like Hector Lecter with his, you know, his face has slipped off the space and is laying. That's so bizarre. I mean, people can't see the forest for the trees sometimes, Gary.
Or the trees through the forest. Well, you know, here's what I'm really worried. The world's most advanced humanoid robot now can have full conversations. I'm worried. You imagine, you know, they're going to replace me and you with robots that can actually interview and have conversations.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Kind of touched on earlier. There's going to be a day like that movie when AI comes to their senses and thinks, you know what, humankind, you're obsolete. Why are you here? You're taking up space.
I don't know about that, but if they want my check for $14 a week to do the show, they can have it.
I thought he's up to 15 by now, but okay.
Now it's like $14.03. Well, this major car company. That the cars are made in the United States. I'm not mentioning the name because I don't want to get a lawsuit or a letter or email. But they do make cars that are self-driving, hint, hint. Well, the owner bought a brand new car, and within a few months, the batteries failed. And what happened is the way the water drains it from the vehicle, it drains on top of the battery packs and shorted out the battery packs. Well, the manufacturer basically says, well, you can't have your car back because we already put the battery pack in and it's only $26,000 and you already paid $147,000 for it.
That's so bizarre. You know, you touched on it on the show about these batteries and electric cars. And here's the other thing. That sounds like a design flaw. So how is the customer reliable? And you imagine being locked out of your car until you pretty much extorted some thousands of dollars to get back. That's just.
Right. Well, at least they could pull the batteries back out of it and, you know, he can use it. I don't know what you could do. But $26,000 for a battery pack?
That's unheard of. These, listen, that tells you how much the car costs if the battery is $26,000. Wow.
Yeah, that is really asinine. Well, you know what? A accountant says that she's recommending people not to have much money in their account in the near future, in any of their savings accounts with banks or credit unions, because if the crash happens, you might not have access to your money.
That's true. Listen, we have talked about this for years. You will not get your money out, and people will get extreme. That will cause some stuff right there. Believe it.
Well, if we have a solar flare, you're not going to get your money out either. Good is money, really? Seriously. If you look at it, I mean, what's the difference between a dollar bill and a $100 bill? It's paper. It's only worth what they say it's worth. And I'm telling you, a dollar isn't worth. I went into Arby's today. I'm upset with Arby's. They raised their price. Their classic 2 for $6 is now 2 for $7.
And you know, over a day's time, month's time, year's time, that adds up to a pretty chunk change with all those they sell. So, boy, oh, boy, are they really increased their sales volume.
Yeah, and they used to be this big, and now they're that big. So the size of the thing went down and the price went up. And, you know, I noticed that. When you went and go grocery shopping and you buy a package or something and you get home and you realize, hey, this box of cereal, I'm only getting 3 bowls out of it instead of 5. And it even costs more.
Yes, matter of fact, because I buy grapefruit juice all the time, and it looks the same when it's about 4 to 6 ounces smaller now, but the price actually went up about 50 cents on top of that. So you're losing out per ounces and money-wise. So, and that's just one item.
Go to Starbucks, and I want you guys to do an experiment. Buy their small coffee, buy their medium, and large. Okay? Dump out the small and medium. Just dump it out. Or actually, I take it back. Throw away the medium and dump out the large. Keep the small. Now, I want you to take that cup of coffee, the small, and pour it into Starbucks medium-sized coffee. And you're going to notice, because they tapered the glass different, that small will fill it right to the top. Now, you take that glass, you just now poured it into a medium size from small to medium. Take that medium and dump it into a large.
Yeah, people will be shocked by that. It's 24 after already.
Yeah, now, how about that? Well, you know what? We're going to have a guest calling in. Well, a man dies after eating raw oysters at a seafood restaurant.
Listen, anytime you eat those, you take your chances. I've ate them raw before too, but ouch.
Yeah, that's really scary. And the rise of poisonous snakes because of our climate change is, well, guess what? More snakes are hatching.
Oh, boy, we're going to have a lot more stories about snakes. Hope nobody gets it where that one guy got it in Florida.
Well, I don't know, but I don't need any copperheads or any rattlesnakes or any poison snakes. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't need any more snakes either. I seen that picture. That was a copperhead, too.
Oh, I know. Again, like I said, the stocks had their worst week since bottoming out in June. And it's really freaking out the market today.
It is freaking it out. I'll tell you what, there's a lot going on. And that's just one more thing that we got to deal with, the bad stocks bottoming out. And, oh, boy, it just adds to it.
Well, from AccroWeather, they had a little article. You know, a lot of the John Wayne movies you saw and Gene Autry and all those stuff, Hopalong Cassidy movies and all that stuff. You remember those, don't you? I know not that old or young yet or whatever. But you know what? The town that they used has been underwater for 50-some years. because it was a reservoir. It was a reservoir. They made a reservoir, and that town they used was submerged for 50 years. Guess what? Because of the drought, you can go in and you can see the town where John Wayne made a lot of his movies in the 30s and 40s, again with Gene Autry and all those other ones.
Yeah, that's amazing. All these, you know, ponds and lakes are drying up and things are starting to come to the surface, like when there's a whole town.
I know. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the CIA. Mm-hmm. So be prepared. It's going to be a good show here tonight with a great guest. You're listening to Night Dreams Talk Radio. Check out our website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com.
Greene County, Pennsylvania, was unknown to paranormal enthusiasts until the Kevin Paul Amazon bestseller, Haunted Hills and Hollows, What Lurks in Greene County, Pennsylvania, revealed the phenomena lurking in and the haunted history of the southwestern corner of the Keystone State. Even more high strangeness can be found in Book 2 of the series, Kevin Paul's Haunted Hills and Hollows 2, still lurking in Greene County, Pennsylvania. One thing is certain, it is nearly impossible to be alone in Greene County. These riveting books, Haunted Hills and Hollows, and Haunted Hills and Hollows 2, by author Kevin Paul, in paperback, Kindle, and audiobooks, are available now on Amazon.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Night Dreams brings on the night worldwide. Did you know you can find us on your favorite app? And now you can watch us live on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our channel and give us a thumbs up. And now, here's Gary.
And here I am. And boy, we're going to take you down the road you might not want to go to here tonight.
Ronald Kessler is the New York Times best-selling author of 21 books on the White House, FBI, CIA, and Secret Service. A former Washington Post and Wall Street Journal investigative reporter, he has won 2 George Polk Awards, one for national reporting and one for community service, and was named a Washingtonian of the Year by Washingtonian Magazine. For more, visit his website at www.ronaldkessler.com.
Well, welcome to the show, Ronald. How are you doing this Friday?
I'm good. Very good to be with you, Gary.
Well, I got to ask you a question. What got you into, you know, gathering news stories, writing books about the White House, the FBI, the CIA? What got all you motivated for that?
I like to uncover new information. You know, I don't want to bore people with a lot of analysis that everyone else has already written. So I go where the truth takes me, and that's the way a journalist should operate. Way back during Watergate, I was at the Washington Post, and it was a pretty honest paper back then. I sat next to Carl Bernstein, and every night Woodward would come over and they would write the next day's stories together. And I overheard them discuss their sources. I knew that they were legitimate. I saw the pressure they were under. They would run around at midnight knocking on doors. That was real investigative reporting. And I try to operate in the same way. And so you'll find that, for example, my Secret Service book, The First Family Detail, according to factcheck.org, presents positive and negative information about presidents of both parties. That's the way I operate. My latest book is on Trump. I consider it a truthful book, although it ended before he was defeated. But it had about a dozen criticisms, about a dozen things that I issues that I took on with him. And of course, now I you know, cannot stand what he stands for. I was on Jesse Waters recently on Fox News talking about the Mar-a-Lago papers, and I, you know, because of my background with knowledge of the FBI and CIA, I discussed what kinds of documents could possibly qualify for these very high security clearances, way beyond top secret, way beyond sensitive compartmented. And one example was the orders that the president would consult to launch a counterstrike against Russia in the event of a nuclear attack. That's papers that are tied to the nuclear football. The president would have only 20 minutes to decide which counterstrike to initiate. And this is the type of information that very well could have been put in there at Mar-a-Lago, as well as CIA penetrations of foreign leaders, of Putin, recruitment of spies overseas. And meanwhile, of course, the Russians and the Chinese would have been trying day and night to penetrate Mar-a-Lago all the way through his presidency, and very possibly did obtain these documents. So that's how serious that is, and I speak the truth about these things.
It is really scary, you know, and it keeps going on and on. I mean, I'm worried about civil unrest, because you have a lot of Trump supporters out there that believe he's still the legal president. And it is scary. You know, I'll be honest with you. I voted for Trump. But I'll be honest with you. When it comes to politicians nowadays, I think we could go get somebody from Skid Row and make him president, and they couldn't do any worse.
I think that's pretty close. You know, it is scary. You know, I tend to be a little overly optimistic and think that people eventually are going to see through this sham. But, you know, you simply cannot support a lawless individual, no matter what good he did as president. And there was plenty of good that he did. Lowest unemployment in history for women and blacks, for example. But, you know, we certainly can't take a chance on Trump instigating a coup all over again, or as he tried to do. So that's certainly something that I get into. But, you know, I range into a lot of other subjects, such as the FBI, as you mentioned. I covered the FBI at the Washington Post as far back as Hoover, and I wrote about his secret files and how he used them. And it's always quoting the individuals who have firsthand knowledge, quoting FBI officials of the time as saying, yeah, we had these files on, for example, a member of Congress having an affair or being arrested with a prostitute. Why? Not because they violated any federal law, but because Hoover wanted to have something on them. And he would send an agent to that congressman and say, you know, by the way, we understand you had a little trouble last night. Of course, we won't tell anybody. We won't talk about it. And immediately that put that congressman under the lever of Hoover. And so they did not want to fire Hoover. And the same with the presidents, the same with Johnson, the same with JFK. He made it clear to them.
But Ronald, didn't Nixon let him go?
No, Nixon was afraid to let him go. He died in office after 48 years as FBI director. You know, Lyndon Johnson said, I would rather have him pissing inside the tent and outside the tent. And so that's why he didn't fire him. So everything Hoover did, you know, on the one hand, he was a Jekyll and Hyde. He did create this law enforcement agency that, despite the recent corruption under Jim Comey, is admired throughout the world as the greatest law enforcement agency in the world. And he created the file system. He created the fingerprint system. He insisted that reports be factual. He would not tolerate brutality against suspects, which was very common in those days in police departments. But at the same time, he violated American rights and seemed to have difficulty distinguishing between real espionage or spying and simply disagreeing with the government. So you had violations of rights left and right. One other thing people don't realize, though, is that when Bobby Kennedy became Attorney General, he insisted that Hoover should go after those who abuse civil rights workers, and he actually was able to abolish the Ku Klux Klan. Hoover infiltrated the Klan with agents who were undercover, and that's why the Ku Klux Klan today is almost totally powerless. So it's quite a complicated story. And then, you know, going to more recent times, under Jim Comey, he absolutely corrupted the FBI to the point where one lawyer fabricated evidence against an individual to get a surveillance warrant. And the deputy director initiated an investigation specifically targeting Trump, whereas before there was just an investigation into Russia influence in the elections. Why did he initiate this? It's just unbelievable, and very few have picked this up. In his book, he explained why he opened this investigation. He said that Trump appeared on Lester Holt, and Trump said, well, I fired Comey, and I thought about this Russia thing. And then guess what? He went on to say, but I realized that by firing Comey, I was just prolonging the FBI investigation into possible Russia collusion, and I wanted it to be done perfectly. And guess what? The deputy director did not include that in his book. So he dishonestly suppressed the information that would have completely exonerated Trump, and yet this is what led to this investigation and the recommendation to appoint Bob Mueller as special counsel. But more recently under Ray, and of course you have, on the right, you have this confusion between what Comey did and what Ray is doing now. Ray has not done anything wrong, in my opinion. I don't see any evidence of any politicization. The FBI has indicted both Republicans and Democrats. He certainly did the right thing when it came to the search at Mar-a-Lago. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, the FBI's reputation is being besmirched, which undercuts all of our freedom, because if people don't trust the FBI, they're not going to cooperate. They're not going to give the FBI tips. So we are in a bad place when it comes to this issue.
It's really scary. Now, what's the difference between the FBI and the CIA for the people out there that might not know?
Well, that's a wonderful question, because very few people know. The CIA concentrates on developing intelligence that would affect our national security overseas. So they will, for example, develop diplomats overseas as sources. They will break into embassies to plant bugging devices overseas, whereas the FBI focuses on the U.S. and developing sources within the U.S. The FBI does have agents all over the world, but it's all focused on U.S. information. And then in the end, the FBI has law enforcement authority, so it can bring a case against an individual. And, of course, that gives the FBI tremendous leverage, tremendous power. You know, years ago there was this debate about whether there should be an MI5 situation replacing the FBI after 9/11. And yet MI5 does not have law enforcement authority, and they envy the FBI because they don't have that club to use against people if necessary. The FBI goes after mafia people, corrupt politicians, corrupt members of Congress, child abuse of children, wide range of other crimes, including espionage. And they've done a pretty good job of that. Under Hoover, as I said, you know, he confused disagreeing with the government with real spying, and so you did have a lot of real spies. Now the FBI has been able to roll up a number of spies, a number of terrorists. That's, of course, the most important function right now. Under Bob Mueller, who, of course, really screwed up as a special counsel, but under Mueller, he turned around the FBI to make it more prevention-oriented. Of course, they always wanted to prevent terrorist attacks before they happen, but he said, no, the important thing is to stop the next attack, is to penetrate terrorist organizations, develop sources, and then, of course, put people in jail. But number one, we have to protect the country. And that really has made a big difference, and that's why we have not had a successful foreign terrorist network attack since 9/11. That's something you'll never hear, because all you hear is criticism of the FBI, but that's a fact. And another, you know, really unique piece of information in my book, The Secrets of the FBI, is how the FBI plants bugging devices in the targets of their investigations. You know, the Trump camp was saying, probably the FBI planted bugging devices when they did the search at Mar-a-Lago. Well, of course, that's foolish. First of all, they would never do it in front of people at Mar-a-Lago, in front of the video cameras and surveillance cameras. They had no reason to do it. All they were after were the documents. But beyond that, what the FBI does is they have what they call TAC ops teams, tactical operations teams, which is just a very vague term to conceal what they really are up to, which is bugging and acting as legal burglars to break into homes and offices and embassies to plant these bugging devices. And just as an example of how they might do this, let's say they want to break into an embassy in Washington to plant bugging devices. They will watch the premises for weeks beforehand, and they'll see who goes in, who goes out. If there's any dog on the premises, they'll take a picture of the dog and show it to a veterinarian on contract who will prescribe just the right amount of tranquilizer to shoot into the dog with a dart gun on the night of the break-in. And then on the night of the break-in, agents are stationed at the homes of anybody who works at the embassy or might go into the embassy. And if any individual, you know, decides to go back in the middle of the night, the agents will stage a phony traffic accident, or they'll open a fire hydrant in the area so nobody is allowed in the area, in order to, of course, prevent discovery of the TAC op agents who are planting the bugging devices.
Now, but do they have warrants to be able to plant these? Okay.
All quarter authorized break-ins.
Now, I want to get into the CIA. What is the role of the CIA?
The CIA develops intelligence on any threat to our security, certainly our enemies, and they do it either through human intelligence developing the individuals who have the information as sources, as spies, or in collaboration with the NSA. NSA will intercept communications, and the CIA will analyze the communications. So that's their role, and they've been doing a pretty good job. I mean, you saw how they were able to report on what Putin's plans were for Ukraine before they happened, and they turned out to be very accurate reports. That's pretty amazing. I've never seen that in the past. They didn't get involved in as seriously as the FBI did with the Trump situation. And you know, I think they have a very clean record at this point.
Yeah, but it weren't the CIA at one point. Yeah, I don't know if you remember of a person called John Lear.
John who?
John Lear.
No.
Okay, he was famous in aviation. He also was famous for flying, well, aircraft for the CIA. And, you know, some of the stories that he mentioned about, like, with the CIA is kind of scary. I mean, at one point, isn't kind of the CIA kind of rogue when it comes to a lot of stuff they do?
Well, that's a good point. That certainly going way back, they were. Before the Church Committee hearings, they engaged in all these foolish plots to try to kill Castro. They wiretapped people, Americans, for no reason, including journalists. They did engage in a number of abuses, but members of Congress were partly responsible for that because they didn't want to know what the CIA was doing. They would take a position, you know, I don't care what they're doing, let them do what they want. The Church Committee began these hearings to expose this. A lot of it was just foolishness, you know, like a plan to get Castro's beard to drop off. And if that happened, then somehow that would undercut his credibility with the Cuban people. Just nutty, nutty ideas, nutty plots. After that, after the hearings, the CIA got in shape and got focused, and I think pretty much has fulfilled its mission properly.
Yeah, but don't they still get involved to try to topple different governments that we don't believe in?
No, they could if the president gave that order, but President Ford signed an executive order outlining assassination plots against foreign leaders, and behind that was the idea: well, you know, if we start assassinating foreign leaders, they're going to assassinate our president, and you know, let's just have a draw here. And so, no, they don't do that, but they do uncover what other countries are doing. For example, Iraq's efforts to assassinate various people are enemies in the U.S. Way back, there was a huge penetration that most people haven't heard about in the CIA by Carl Kosher. He was a Czech intelligence service officer who reported to the KGB, and he actually got a job in the CIA. He supposedly passed a polygraph, although the FBI said the chart showed he didn't pass it, but as a result, he compromised a very sensitive spy that we had over in Russia by the name of Agorodnik, and he was arrested by the KGB, and he said, well, I'll give you a confession. Could you just get my Montblanc pen from my apartment? So they gave him the pen. Well, the pen had a cyanide capsule concealed in it, given to him by the CIA. He swallowed it and died. And I was able to interview Carl Kosher for one of my books, Spy versus Spy, and his gorgeous wife, Hannah. And the reason I mentioned gorgeous is, among other things, they would go to wife swapping parties and sex orgies, and part of it was to obtain information from other people in the government in sensitive positions. So they would get to know them on a very intimate basis. And, of course, there was an implied blackmail there because they knew what they were doing. Gosher, you know, pretty much admitted that he did this. He was prosecuted by the U.S. government, so he can never come back to the U.S.
Well, you know, when you really think about some of these old spy TV shows, do you remember the back Robert Culp, Bill Cosby, I Spy, where they would travel the world and stuff like that? Is the CIA anything like that?
Gee, I didn't watch it that much. I just can't stand to watch fictional accounts.
I know.
Because I know the real story. The CIA uses very advanced technology. They will conceal, and the same with the FBI. In fact, the FBI showed me an actual bugging device that was the size of a postage stamp and not much bigger, not much thicker than a postage stamp. And it could record or transmit for 20 hours. Pretty amazing stuff. And the FBI and CIA, cooperate on developing these devices. And you can imagine how valuable that is to obtaining information.
Well, you know, I had a friend years ago who actually was worked for the CIA. He would be in an outpost listening to communications. And that was his job with the CIA. And he would be gone for a long period of time and gathering information. So they did stuff like that, and they probably still do stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. You know, when after JFK was assassinated, the CIA was listening to what was going on in the Cuban embassy in Mexico City, and they picked up Lee Harvey Oswald applying to flee to Cuba before his assassination. And I interviewed the individual who actually transcribed those intercepts. So that's the kind of thing that they do. But, speaking of the JFK assassination, when it comes to these conspiracies, you can always say, if any of this was true, and given how sensitive it is, and given that the people involved could make millions selling books on the information they have, clearly there wasn't a conspiracy. In the case of JFK, if Russia had assassinated the president, of course the people in Russia by now would have come out and written a book about it. So that's one way to evaluate some of these conspiracy theories.
Do you think Lee Oswald actually did the killing of JFK?
Yeah. I interviewed the FBI agent who analyzed the ballistics, and he explained, why one thing or another seemed out of place, and it really wasn't. In the case of the RFK assassination, there was a claim that there was another gunman, even though RFK was killed right in front of hundreds of people in a ballroom. Everyone saw what happened, and yet these conspiracy theories go on. Obviously, there are conspiracies, but I think you have to be really skeptical before you start accepting some of these claims, just as we are skeptical about and realize that the claims about the last election were phony. 60 courts ruled that there was no evidence of any fabrication of voting procedures. So it's we live in a very strange world where every day there's some new wild claim, and we have to do our best to use our common sense.
Well, you know what really, Ronald, scares me is, I'm 70 years old, and I have watched, from when Kennedy got assassinated, all the presidents till now, and, and Congress and Senate and our governments in general, not just the United States, worldwide. I think society has changed so much, and not for the good. I mean, really, it has gotten really scary how politicians operate, how government operates, and, you know, they're slowly taking our rights away from us, the citizens. That is really what it kind of floors me. I have a friend who worked for the DOD for like 13, 14 years, and one of his jobs was to sit there, and when people would say certain words on a phone or, you know, emails, they were monitoring the average citizen of our country. And that really scares me.
I don't believe that. You know, there's been no evidence of any interception like that, you know, without a court order, unless it's a foreign citizen, in which case, yes, they may, you know, they're trying to sift out plots by terrorists overseas, and, you know, if they say certain words or refer to certain code words, then definitely NSA is on that and will track it down. But of course, in the end, they want to find the real story and not just some made up story. But when it comes to U.S. citizens, there are really good safeguards in place, and a lot of that, those, you know, intercepts of, for example, emails overseas, have led to plots being rolled up. And that's, in the end, what will protect us.
Yeah, I know. That just scares me. But he did say there were certain words you never want to use in the email. There are certain words you don't want to say over the phone because it can draw attention to you. He also told me if somebody is being monitored and now you talk to them, like if I was being monitored and then you talk to me, now you're going to be on the list, and it just goes on and on and on. And this guy was very reliable, and it kind of scared me, some of the stuff he told me off the side. Hey, Ronald, we need to take a break. We're going to be back in about 4 minutes. We're going to talk more about, well, the FBI, CIA, and, well, enjoy the break.
Thank you.
come along on a unique journey of adventure and discovery. Read On the Trail of Bigfoot, a first-hand account from paranormal researcher and skilled outdoorsman Mike Dupler on his many years of investigations into the Bigfoot phenomena and his personal encounters with these enigmatic creatures of the forest, complete with photographs. Don't delay. Order your copy today. This book will inspire those who have answered the call to seek this elusive creature, the Bigfoot. The truth is out there. On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. Available now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and IndieBound.org. Do you remember how great paranormal talk radio was in the 80s and 90s? Night Dreams Talk Radio brings back to you talk radio like you remember, with your host, Gary Anderson, broadcasting to you live from his secret compound deep in the great Northwest. Now, here's Gary.
And here I am, and I got to get a different golf club. I tell you, I knocked out the windows twice. That's a lie. I apologize for that. Well, you know, Ronald, again, you know, is the CIA, you know, how major is that? I mean, it's a major spy organization. What do you think is going on with the CIA in Ukraine? You have any idea?
Well, the fact that they were able to report on Russian plans to invade Ukraine and have really kept us up to date on almost a day-to-day basis on what is actually going on there secretly, that tells you that they're on the job, you know, that they have real good penetrations, whether it's human intelligence or signal intelligence, so-called, which is what NSA intercepts. So they've done a very good job. One thing that I've gone into quite a bit is what the presidents are really like, and that can be pretty scary. In my two Secret Service books, the most recent being The First Family Detail, and then previously in the President's Secret Service, I report on, for example, the fact that Lyndon Johnson would sit on a toilet and defecate in front of aides while he was being briefed in the White House. He would hold a press conference at his ranch in Texas and urinate in front of reporters, including female reporters. One Secret Service agent said, if this guy were not president, he would be in a mental hospital. And you really have to, sort of believe in that. I quoted on the record an Air Force One steward who said that Johnson was in Air Force One and discussing a particular piece of legislation, civil rights legislation. He said, I'll have those niggers voting for me for the next 100 years. I'll have those niggers voting for Democrats for the next 100 years. Whereas Hillary was and still is considered the worst Secret Service assignment, she's still being protected as the wife of a former president. She is so nasty to agents that being assigned to her detail is considered a form of punishment. And when she was in the White House, she would actually insist that agents hide behind curtains, literally, or in nearby offices when she walked by. She didn't want to see them. She had such contempt for Secret Service, FBI, police, didn't want to have police at her rallies. Of course, Bill had a mistress who would go and see him at Chappaquiddick as soon as Hillary left, and it was up to the Secret Service to try to make sure that the two women didn't collide. They would let the mistress in without looking at any credentials when she would visit a Chappaquiddick. Joe Biden, when he was vice president, would go back, as he does now, you know, to his home in Wilmington every weekend. Sometimes he would go back, fly back and forth at taxpayer expense several times in a week just to play golf with Obama. But the really shocking thing is that when he would go back to Wilmington, he would insist that the military aid with the nuclear football remain at least a mile behind his motorcade wherever he went in Wilmington. And the reason was he didn't want to be seen as you know, royalty with a lot of Secret Service. He wanted to project his image of regular Joe. And meanwhile, if there were an attack and Obama had been taken out or was unavailable, we would have been obliterated because, of course, the military aid with football could not have caught up with Biden a mile in front of him, even if there were no traffic. Just unbelievable, you know. And this has been picked up to some extent, not as much as another tidbit in my Secret Service books, which was that Biden would skinny dip in front of female Secret Service agents, both at his pool in Washington and his pool in Wilmington, and that offended female agents, but of course there was nothing they could do about it. So, you know, totally different from the regular guy image that Joe Biden would like to project.
Well, you know, let's be honest, every president, you know, if you go back to even before JFK or, you know, God, I mean, let's face it, Johnson or any of these people, you know, I mean, even Kennedy, when he was president, having an affair with Marilyn Monroe. And even then, you know, society has changed because the press knew this was going on. They just kept quiet. I mean, now, exactly. I don't even know. When I watch the news, if you watch Fox or CNN or you watch any of them, I mean, you got all, depending on who's giving the news, you got, I don't believe any of the news anymore. I really don't. It's like nothing but disinformation everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's certainly true to a large extent, but obviously we need to know what is going on and try to sort things out. You know, you can use your brain to see what if they're actually quoting someone on the record or if it's just not for attribution. If there's additional corroboration, and obviously it's important to know these things, you know, before we vote, hopefully. But we are, you know, in a very weird situation. I think a lot of it has to do with the social media, the fact that anybody can get on a computer and say the craziest things, and it goes all over the place. For example, you know, going way back, there were the claims that Obama was not born in the U.S., that he was born in Kenya, despite the fact that there was a birth announcement when he was born in the Hawaii newspapers. So unless his parents knew that he was going to be president when he was born and put this announcement in the Hawaii papers, obviously he was born in Hawaii. But, you know, of course, in a case like that, you can use your common sense and say, well, of course, there was no way to fabricate where he was born, given that there were these announcements. But, you know, the social media just overtakes everything, and then it coarsens the debate on TV as well, and people feel free to make these totally untrue claims. It is going in the wrong direction. I certainly agree with that.
Well, even politicians, I'll be honest with you, going back to Bush, I mean, Middle East, you know, Saddam, I really think we set him up for the fall. And when you really do the research on it, it is really scary how certain things have transpired. And And, you know, there was a lot of talk about Bush, you know, talking about oil and money and all this stuff. Next thing we know, we're in the Middle East.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that's another area that I've gone into. I interviewed George Pirro, who was an FBI agent, who was an Arabic speaker and was assigned to debrief Saddam after his capture and before, obviously, he was executed. And he described how over, of course, the course of almost 6 months, he developed a relationship with Saddam and got his trust. And Saddam admitted that, of course, he did not have WMD, but he wanted enemies, including especially Iraq, to think that he had WMD, and therefore he faked having WMD. You know, he would say, "Yeah, you can inspect this area, but these palaces are closed to you," and purposely created that impression. But on the other hand, he also admitted that he did plan on developing nuclear capability within a year, when he felt that the UN inspectors would lay off and he could do it without being caught. And I think that's a real story. And that's why, you know, now I guess Bush, looking at that today, would say, well, I still should have done more work on trying to uncover what was going on. But it wasn't a simple situation where Bush just, you know, blindly went in there for no reason. There was a reason. I think it's given that Saddam wanted to develop nuclear, I happen to think he made the right decision.
Yeah, but do you think it could have also been tied in with their family, with oil and all this stuff, too?
No, you know, we didn't seize the oil fields. You know, we weren't after the oil at all. No, it was really to protect our security. But obviously, more should have been done to find out what was going on before we took him out.
Yeah. That's what, you know, it still scares me. You know, going back to my friend years and years ago who was in a listening post, that was his job, to monitor all the military, all the political stuff, and then, you know, forward it to, you know, headquarters. He would tell me that, one, it was the most boring job in the world. Two, it was the most frustrating job, and it caused him mental issues. How many agents or people with the CIA or even the FBI have mental issues after, you know, a long time being employed with them?
Well, that can be a problem, especially with the CIA, because CIA officers have to go, for example, into Moscow and pretend to be just diplomats or pretend to be IBM salesmen and lead a double life. And that's very stressful, and they could be killed. That can be a problem. But at the same time, you know, I think in most cases, both CIA and FBI people do understand that they are protecting our security and they're doing the work that we hope they will do to prevent further attacks. And so they feel that they're like a police officer, you know, they're doing the right thing.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think of the CIA in the 60s and 70s. They were pretty much a corrupt organization, weren't they? Because, I mean, here they were funding drug lords in different parts of the world, giving them, you know, weapons, giving them vast amounts of money. I mean, you know, I don't understand how they operate.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to, you know, when I said before the Church Committee hearings, there were all these abuses. You know, it wasn't necessarily to sell drugs. They weren't doing that, but they were doing a lot of other shady things and, you know, dealing with the mafia, enlisting the mafia to kill Castro, just incredibly nutty things and illegal things. So you're right that, of course, that was going on in those days. But now, you know, we do have oversight. We have committees that are supposed to look at these things. Back then, as I said, they, you know, members of Congress didn't want to know what was going on. They didn't have oversight committees. And so that's certainly been a big help. But here's something unusual, which is about a year ago, the monitoring station, the government monitoring station in Hawaii that monitors the carbon dioxide in the air, reported, and this was actually in the Washington Post and the New York Times, although buried, they reported that during the pandemic, when everything, you know, closed down, the highways were deserted, the trains stopped running, the planes were canceled, offices were closed, and therefore there had to be a huge, huge reduction in carbon dioxide emissions. And yet the monitoring station reported that there wasn't. There actually was a slight increase during the pandemic in carbon dioxide emissions. And this is, you know, this is behind the whole climate agenda of Biden. Yes, it's true that our global temperatures have increased very slightly, 1.2 Fahrenheit since the 19th century. That actually, when it comes to doing anything to change that, it's pretty hopeless because you know, we would never have a situation again where everything shuts down like that, even if you had, you know, incredibly efficient furnaces. And of course, this has been pretty much ignored by the media, even though it was reported in those two papers. You know, nobody really has picked up on it. I did an op-ed in the Washington Times about it, and then at the end of the op-ed, I quoted Biden himself as saying during his State of the Union address that even if we did reduce our emissions a lot, we only account for 15% of the emissions in the world. The rest are from China and India, as you know. And so he said, even if we do everything perfectly, it won't make any difference. But guess what? That was not in the text of his remarks, and only a few outlets picked up what he actually said, which was to totally debunk his whole climate agenda. So, I would like to know what anybody makes of that, because it's just incredible that we have this program to spend hundreds of billions of dollars to retrofit everything, and yet there was no change when the pandemic occurred. And not only that, but the so-called climate scientists at this monitoring station offered different explanations for why there was no reduction. You know, one of them said, well, you know, it's like, it's some crazy quote, didn't make any sense. You know, it's like some garbage heap. And there was another person who said, well, it's just vegetation that emits the carbon dioxide. So if that's true, why are we, you know, cracking down on combustion engines?
Well, you know, here's the thing, too. You know, going to, like I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, there's a major car manufacturer. It makes the cars in this country, right? And they operate on batteries. And they also make self-driving cars, which a few people have already died in. But here's the point. They have a design defect where water drains on the battery pack. Here the guy buys a car for $147,000 and some odd change. And less than a year, his battery pack goes out. And they're saying, well, you know what? We'll fix it for $26,000. That's how much it costs to replace the battery pack.
Yeah.
And it's a design defect. And here's the thing. We're not, our batteries are still not at the point yet where I think we could depend on going battery versus gas combustion engines. My daughter bought one of these cars, her and her husband. And she was bragging, look how much money, Dad, we're saving each week. And I said, but honey, what happens in about 2.5 years when that battery pack or the battery in that battery pack fails? All that money you saved on gas is going to be nothing.
And you know, meanwhile, of course, the batteries require these rare metals that are, you know, in China and Africa, and they're in limited supply. And even the best cars don't go more than, 200 or 300 miles on one charge. And 60% to 80% of the electricity that they use is generated with fossil fuel. So in the end, you know, they're not really doing anything about to change the atmosphere.
No.
It makes no sense. You know, it's a religion, and there's no way to reverse the way people think about this.
No, and I've had a lot of different scientists, climate scientists, on the show, and I'll tell you what, it is the most uninteresting shows, because you got one scientist saying one thing, you got another one saying this one, you got another one saying this. All I can say is we're in for a ride, because the climate is changing. I've seen it from 70 years of living on this planet, and I can tell you, it's not like it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago. I think we're all in a ride. I think the government's hiding stuff from us, but that's another story. Well, Ronald, our time is up. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Where can they find your books? Do you have a website? Any of that you want to share, please do.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I've written 21 nonfiction books, and they're all available at Amazon and other outlets. My website is ronaldkessler.com. I'm also on Wikipedia. And I think the website pretty much lays out my background and the books and whatever controversial thing you might imagine I might say, including this recent interview with Jesse Waters on Fox, in which I denounced the documents at Mar-a-Lago and the fact that Trump was keeping them, and explained what incredibly sensitive information could have been in those documents.
Again, do you have a website?
Yeah, it's ronaldkessler.com.
Okay, sir. I want to thank you for being on. I want you to have a great weekend, and I really enjoyed having you on the show.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it as well.
Okay, my friend, you take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, James.
Yes.
Yeah, who do we have as a guest for a Sunday on Truckers After Dark?
Well, Sunday we're going to have Kevin Paul come on. He's going to talk about some haunted stuff, and especially weird and strange and paranormal things going on in Greene County, Pennsylvania, and all across the country.
Oh, yeah, a lot of strange things. And you know what we do? We're going to also have two truckers on the show giving us, well, what's going on in the trucking industry, how truckers feel what is going on in the trucking industry, and we're going to talk about what they see on the road, too. So we're going to cover all that, a lot of great music. And who's our guest for next Tuesday, buddy?
Bob Zimmerman, and he is a space historian, and he's going to come on and talk about space, past, present, and future, and what's going on.
I want to get into what that Russian astronaut that knew when he was going up there that it was a one-way ride, and they have recordings of him when, you know, he was coming back to, in reentry and burning up. A horrible thing. A lot of strange and horrible things happened when we first started going into space.
Oh, yeah. Big time. And I remember seeing a documentary about that, because they haven't recorded. And he knew it was the end. You know, it was horrible.
Yeah, he wasn't happy about it either. I can tell you that. And then our guest on Thursday of next week.
We have Jason Gleaves coming on. Now, he is an expert for many years of analyzing videos and pictures of UFOs, and he does that to, you know, determine if they're fake or hoaxes or real.
Okay. Well, you know, there's been a lot of reports right now in the Ukraine and even Greece of UFO activity, a lot.
Oh, there is. It's really on the rise, and it's connection with a lot of the conflicts going on across the country.
I know. That is really – and Friday, who do we have?
Oh, we have a special guest Friday, Gary. We have Jesus Payon Jr. coming on. Now, for those that may not know who he is, he's a kind of a well-known character actor on You Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. And he's going to come on talking about his experiences with Bigfoot and other paranormal things.
Yeah, and that his experience started when with his mother, you know, with Bigfoot. And again, yes, Jesus is going to be on. That's his first name, really. And he's the bad guy in Breaking Bad and You Better Call Saul. That's a good show, you know. I wish it would be more seasons of that.
Oh, I know. Both of those shows. And Better Call Saul, the last season 6 finale just happened, I think, last week or a couple weeks ago. But it's a great show. You're right.
Yeah. All the good shows, like The Walking Dead, you know, that's over with. And I was talking to Megan, the guy who, you know, with the baseball bat here on TikTok last week. And they're hoping to make some movies next.
Oh, Jeff Morgan, I think.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a matter of fact, he played the father in the Supernatural series, TV series, too.
Yeah, real nice guy. You know what? Him and the other guy, I can't remember, the guy who was the sheriff, I can't think of his name right now. Again, you know, that they really care about their fans. They get on TikTok all the time, and they're making themselves totally accessible to their fans.
Yeah, and even our guest for next Friday, Jesus, he is very nice, and I talked to him on the phone, and he was excited to come on. We're excited to have him on, but yeah, you know, some of these people aren't very cordial, but then when you do come across the ones that are, even like Tony Dow, it just makes it all worthwhile to have him on.
Yeah, I miss him. You know, let's face it, I kind of grew up with watching Leave It to Beaver, you know? Beaver was always getting in trouble, and his older brother always would try to guide him the right way. And you know, you better not let your dad see. No, you better not let dad know.
I know. There was always, it seemed every week, there was always a life's lesson to be heard and told and learned.
Okay. Well, everybody, if you haven't subscribed to our channel, shame on you. Guido is going to be on your doorstep in about 5 minutes. So please subscribe to the channel if you haven't. Give us a thumbs up. A lot of you guys aren't doing that. Uh-huh. I got ESP or PSA, whatever. Please do that. That's important for our sponsors to see that there's people watching us at least. And, you know, on our show, Sunday show, we had over 5.5 million downloads and over 300 and some thousand live listeners. And again, you know, I want to, you know, say a big shout out to all the truckers. Again, a big shout out to Barb, to Ron, to Spacecast, to Nancy, to everybody on chat here tonight. Have a good one. We'll catch you on the other side of the campground tomorrow, or Sunday, I should say. Everybody have a good one.